Hello and welcome to a three inning save podcast. You know, Adam and Jamie from Mythbusters are sort of famously like, they don't talk, they weren't friends behind the scenes. They did their job and that was it. It's not the case. For you and I. I mean, I will text you random esoteric baseball questions that I assume you just know off the top of your head.
Yeah. Well, you texted the other day, and it was worded not vaguely, it was pretty clear, but you're basically asking who was the all-time leader in three inning saves. And I didn't know if you meant like this. I don't think you said all time, and I was just like,
I think I had year? I snuck the word career in there, but maybe okay, not. Maybe.
And then I was like, does he just mean Dodgers? Did we talk? And then I was like, oh. And,
did we ever figure out who actually leads MLB / Dodgers? Oh. So I was interested in both.
Okay.
In three plus inning saves. No, I did not sneak the word career in. I was wrong.
It's a good question. And it made me think, I'm like, we are the three inning save podcast. And I actually didn't know the answer. But I do now. And I'm here to tell you. So it is Gene Garber, of all people, who pitched from 73 to 88, mostly for the Braves. If you see a picture of him, a classic 1980s beard for a baseball player at times, not all the time. But he had 52 of them. I did this search. None of the retroactive business, only when saves were official. Now, and we've talked about this before, the rules for saves have changed, like Charlie Huff. Like had a 5-inning save once where it's like that's not really – it is possible technically if we're like relievers, but the – you know, it was different – somewhat different rules back then. Mike Marshall is second with 38. And then you have like Dan Quisenberry, classic 80s reliever, the Submariner, Bob Stanley, Raleigh Fingers, Bill Campbell. These are all pretty much your classic – multi-inning 70s relievers. It's like all of them are on here. So Gene Garber, 52 of them.
Deeply satisfied and happy. Yeah. Mike Marshall would have been my guess, I think. Yeah. So happy to kind of be close. Maybe I also might have guessed like some of the like Charlie Huff, but only because of us doing the story. Well, you know what else we have? Dodgers news to talk about. That story more maybe the entertaining
had
than
no
the Dodgers.
Three inning saves this week, almost because they barely had any wins.
I had to say you have to win to get a save. A bad homestand. We'll recap it. See if there's a reason for long term concern. Eric will kind of break down where he thinks things can get better, things can get worse, and we have questions from Craig after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I wonder what the Dodgers' Pythagorean record was this week.
Well, it's so funny you should ask. I assume a lot of it's related to the Mets series. So they did outscore the Mets in their three-game series. So
what else could you ask for?
Series champions, as far as I'm concerned. No. But before I, again, once again, before we get into the Dodgers, I have more three-inning save talk for you. Mike Marshall does, in fact, lead the Dodgers list as well, 17. Charlie Huff, who we've done a rewind on, we've done two rewinds on, one on him, one on his first three-inning save or five-inning save or whatever. And Alejandro, he has 12. Alejandro Pena has 11. And then you go through this list and, like, you know, Steve Howe, Tom Niedenfuhr, classic 80s relievers. But then number six, or tied for number six with 5 three-inning saves, Pete Mickelson, Mikkelsen, basically screaming for us to do a Dodgers rewind on. So I'm marking this down, and sometime soon we will do a Dodgers rewind on Pete. Could be Mikkelsen. I don't know. I'll find out. Ryan Yarbrough, tied for 10th right now. Andre Jackson, patron saint of the three-inning save podcast, is 9th with 4. That's your list. But I'm looking forward to those Dodgers rewinds.
No, me potential. Too. Me too, for sure.
It's funny, right? We're recording this on a Sunday, and what happened on Sunday was the Dodgers just absolutely pasting the Mets, 10-0. Like, everything possible went right, and it made them 2-4 on the week, right? Like, it was just like it's completely incongruous with everything. 2-4
on the week, and then after like 3-6 series against the Padres.
And so on Sunday, Shohei Ohtani broke the major league record for most home runs by a Japanese-born player. 176. Hideki Matsui had 175. He has 5 home runs with the Dodgers now, which is 2 shy of Dave Roberts' record for a player born in Japan. So I believe Roberts last week, when he tied Matsui, when Ohtani tied Matsui, he's like, it was sort of jokingly brought up. He's like, yeah, you know, you still have the Dodgers record. And he's like, yeah, I'm not expecting that to last very long or whatever. But then after on Sunday, after the game, Ohtani did say, he's like, I'm also looking forward to beating my manager, or what, I forget exactly his wording, but he brought it up too. So they're having some fun with it. Also on Sunday, Tyler Glasnow, he pitched 8 scoreless innings. What? In 2024, a pitcher can do that. What's weird, because the Dodgers scored 8 runs in the 5th in this game, and it was 10-0 for a while. And like Glasnow, once he got through 6, I'm like, that's a good way to cap off a week. And he went out for the 7th. All right, fine. Like, he's their ace. Let's do it. Then he went out for the, I mean, his pitch count was fine. I think he barely got over 100. Like, you know, maybe he's like 105 or something. But like, so it wasn't that. It was just like, that's just so rare. Like, they never do that. First time a Dodgers pitcher or a starter had pitched into the 8th since Clayton Kershaw in July 2022. First time, same for completing 8 innings, same thing. So it was just a bizarre like ending to a week that was just really bad. Like, we mentioned they lost last weekend to the Padres, and then they lost to the Nationals, then they lost to the Mets. They lost 2 out of 3 in every series. It's the first time they've lost three series in a row in the same homestand at Dodger Stadium since 2005. They also, in 2011, they did lose 3 series in 1 homestand, but that was a longer homestand with a 4th series, and they won a series in between the, you know, 2 of the series losses, so not quite the same. But I looked, so dating back to 2005, they've had 54 like extended homestands, like, you know, three teams or longer, and like these are the only 3 that they've lost three series in those. So like it doesn't happen too often. And like even Glasnow himself, who was great on Sunday, he had a bad outing on Monday. Like, he gave up 6 runs to the Nationals, 6 extra base hits. It's like his only bad start of the year so far. He was also sick that day, and you know, you know, everyone, you sort of might always be pitching with something, but then, like, it kind of lends credence to that when he comes out and just absolutely shoves on Sunday, right? Like, his last two healthy starts have been great. 14 strikeouts in Minnesota and then 10. I'll get to those in a second. But the Dodgers were also shut out on Wednesday by the Nationals, first time since July of last year. The most frustrating game, I think, of the week was probably Saturday. The Dodgers lost that game 6-4 to the Mets. So that was their third loss in a row. They hadn't done that all year. They didn't lead in any of those three games. So, like, it was just like, it seems like they were literally constantly playing catch up. Sometimes it was tied and stuff, but it's just tough to always, like, sort of play from behind like that. But so Saturday was weird because you had Betts, Ohtani, and Freeman. They all reached base four times, right? Like, they're always on base, and then, like, nobody did anything besides them. Like, pretty much. They only scored four runs in the game. Somehow, they were 1-for-8 with 6 strikeouts with the bases loaded.
It's impressive.
Like, yeah, I mean, you have to try hard to do that. Like, that is, like, it's almost comical at this point. Like, when you're, you know, it just, like, kept happening. Gavin Stone started the game. He walked 5. He was pulled in the 4th inning. The bullpen's been shaky. Like, Ryan Brazier gave up a home run in that game. Joe Kelly's been struggling. It's basically like Evan Phillips, you know, at the top. Maybe Daniel Hudson, like, behind him. And then it's like, I don't know, like, how you – I mean, I know how they're using guys, but, like, who's the next most, you know, like, reliable right now? It's just hard to find out. And then with Phillips, it's weird because – so he pitched Saturday. They gave up an unearned run. Also, the defense has been somewhat sloppy at times. But Phillips hadn't pitched since the previous Saturday. Now, part of that is, like, it's always a balance with, you know, your best reliever, closer or not. They didn't have a lot of leads at the end of the game for him to pitch. They were up 5-2 on Tuesday against the Nationals, which they won. They added another run in the 8th to make it 6-2, so they didn't pitch Phillips in that game. And then they're like, you know, the figuring is you don't want to, like, overuse him, right? Like, so, but then you get to a spot where, like, oh man, we haven't used him in a while. Like, so it's just this weird balance. Like, I think, well, Phillips, they did use him when they were down, but Phillips was going to pitch no matter what on Saturday. Now, there is, like, you know, some light at the end of a tunnel here is that Blake Treinen, he faced hitters at Dodger Stadium Thursday and Saturday this week. He could go on a rehab assignment this coming week. But again, you know, he's been good with the Dodgers, but, like, in 2021, right? Like, he's been out with, like, shoulder injuries, like, the last 2 years, basically. Like, so, you know, expecting him to be back, come back and be like, well, we got an 8th inning guy now, you know, or something like that. It's not going to be like that. But I just think the more options they have, the better. I will say, though, this week did provide an opportunity. There were some pretty interesting conversations, like, about slumping. Chris Taylor, he's been just had a rough go of it this year. He was 0 for April heading into Friday. He got up to 0 for 31 until he had a bases loaded single in that game. One of the Dodgers' 3 hits with the bases loaded this year. Actually, you know what? I didn't check if they had actually bases loaded hits on Sunday. They might have added to this, but it's been a rough go with the bases loaded. But that Taylor tied the game on Friday, and then the bullpen gave up 5 runs in the last 3 innings to lose. It was one of those weekends. But Taylor talked about it, like, he's like, it was good getting a monkey off the back, all that stuff. But his basic thing is he's striking out, like, you know, almost like half the time, you know, to start the year. And he was saying, like, he's having trouble, like, getting under fastballs and or maybe getting, you know, too much under them. But his swing is very complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. And he basically said, like, you know, the moving parts have a point. They all have, like, a function, but it's just a matter of, like, he's having trouble, like, getting them to do what he wants them to do, basically. And, like, that's obviously the struggle. And that's just, he's just been in a rough go. You know, on a relative scale, like, Freddie Freeman was also slumping, but, like, he was 5 for his last 37, and you're like, well, Chris Taylor would have killed for 5 for 37 in his, like, streak or whatever. But Freeman talked extensively Friday night about, like, his mechanics, how The lower half of his body was just off rotationally, how his like hips were messing him up to where his bat was barely in the strike zone for a very like a small amount of time. He was like, I can basically only like pull changeups to right or pull off speed pitches to right field, and everything else I basically have to foul off, you know, or something, and I can't really do much with it. Other pitches, like he fouled off 8 pitches Friday night in a 13 pitch at bat, and then he ended up flying out like kind of weakly to left. But then, I mean, and he's also a guy who doesn't really take batting practice on the field like most of the time. And he did it like maybe 5 times during this homestand. Like it's been a struggle. Even on the, they rarely do daytime batting practice for day games. He did it on Saturday too. There's like, so he's just been trying anything, but he's been seeing results Saturday and Sunday. He turned around 2 fastballs, 95-mile-an-hour fastballs for, like, strong singles to center. Saturday, drove in 3. He had 2 doubles, drove in 2 more on Sunday, so including pulling one of them. So, like, he's looking better. Like, so, I mean, and plus, it's all, like I said, it's all relative, right? Like, he hasn't looked that lost. Now, I will say he hasn't homered since March 28th, but other than that, like, you know, I just think it's a matter of time before he's kind of gets going. But yeah, but it's just interesting to hear them like talk about that, because, you know, it's hard to get, especially when you're struggling, someone to be like, well, here's what's going on, right?
Yeah,
like,
as opposed to, I'm just grinding, just got to keep at it. Yeah, all the platitudes.
So that was a nice thing. Now, there were some highlights in the form of, like, we have some new Dodgers to talk about. So Ricky Venasco was first. He was on Monday. He's a reliever. The Dodgers traded for him last June from Texas, and he was a starter in the minors with Texas, but they sort of converted him to relief. They ended up outriding him at some point off the 40-man roster during the year. He became a minor league free agent at the end of the year, but then the Dodgers, like within a few days or maybe a week, signed him to a major league deal. I asked him about that on Monday, and he said it was like, he's like, the Dodgers were basically the team he wanted to go back to. He loved, like, everything about it, the communication, like, everything they did for him. They helped him, like, you know, sort of refine his pitches, and he had great success, like, in relief. So he got the call. He was pretty much all smiles. It was funny, like, so he pitched 2 innings. The Dodgers did lose that Monday game because that was the Glasnow start. But Venasco pitched 2 perfect innings in relief, but then the classic, thank you for your work. We're optioning you the next day. But I will say this, like, I was there. He's like packing up his stuff Tuesday, still like a big smile on his face. He's like, man, I got to be in the majors. His wife and baby were there. I think his mom, his mother-in-law, his agent were there. So it was like a good experience for him just generally. So Tuesday's turn was Andy Páez, who got the call Tuesday. And so Jason Hayward still is dealing with back issues. He last played on the 30th of March. So they first thought it was, you know, back tightness. They thought it was just going to be like a shorter term IL stint. So that's when they claimed Taylor Trammell off waivers. And, you know, as sort of a short term fix, but then like Hayward like took longer to get back. Now it's to the point where Hayward's going to need a rehab assignment. He's going to miss at least this next week, I think, and possibly maybe a little longer. So, needing more of a long-term fix in the outfield. They called up Páez, who was tearing up AAA. Now, that said, he only had played 16 games in AAA, counting the one last year before getting hurt, and a major shoulder surgery, but he's been great, like, this year, and so that earned him the call-up. So he singled on the very first pitch he saw, which was fun, on Tuesday, but then like he's striking out a lot, right? Like, so he's 9 strikeouts and 20 plate appearances so far, but he started every game, center field and right field. Great arm. And then I even tweeted about, like, man, rough start for Andy Páez like earlier Sunday. And then I think next at bat he doubled, and then same inning, in fact, it was all in the 5th inning. And then he hit a 3-run home run in the fifth. So it's like, well, like, and someone was like, hey, someone replied to me, can you do it for Gavin too? and my sort of jokey reply to him was, which one? But no. So I will say they said they're going to give Páez a runway. Like Dave Roberts does like using that term, but it sounds like they are. And like, you know, good for him. He's earned it. And like, It'd be interesting to see what he does over the next week, week and a half, and see. Because you can make an argument that when Hayward gets back, Pajes should still stay, and and they'll figure out something else. Like, you know, we'll deal with that problem when we get there, that kind of a thing. But yeah, so he was next Tuesday. Pajes is from Cuba. His family, extended family, not here, but his wife was here. He gave the first ball for his first hit to her. So that was cool. Landon Knack got the call Wednesday. Right away, he allowed home run and two runs in the first inning. This was a Wednesday afternoon game. But then, he settled down after that. He finished five innings. That's all he gave up. Any normal scenario that's good start probably would get the win, but the Dodgers just picked that day to not score. And so he got stuck with the loss. It is the first time the Dodgers have had a major league debut on three straight days since April 28th to the 30th, 1995. That was Greg Hansel and Todd Williams. They're both pitchers. And then catcher Noe Munoz, who I believe played two total games with the Dodgers, but they signed him out of the Mexican League. The issue there was Mike Piazza had a hamstring injury, not enough to put him on the injured list, but he just wasn't playing right away, right then. So they signed him back up to Carlos Hernandez, basically. Knack will get one more start this coming week. That's partially because Walker Buehler's not quite ready yet. He's going to have at least one more rehab start this coming week. Buehler was very wild Thursday. He was supposed to go 80 to 85 pitches. He ended up throwing 68 pitches in 2 2/3 innings, only half of them for strikes. But AAA is weird. There's two different strike zones they use. Tuesday through Thursday, half of the six game series each week, they do fully automated strike zone. So it's a robot zone. They signal to the umpire and they make whatever the call the computer says. Friday to Sunday is when they do umpires calling balls and strikes, and it's a challenge system. Each team gets three. You get up to three misses. Once you get your third unsuccessful challenge, you're not allowed to challenge anymore, uh-huh. Right? So you can't just go willy-nilly. But Buehler's first two rehab starts with Oklahoma City were Sunday and a Friday. Or maybe it was Sunday and a Saturday. So they were with more of a system he knows, right? Yeah. An umpire calling strikes. So this one, he didn't know until he started pitching that it was automated strike zone. Because he was looking around. And then I asked him about it Friday just in passing. And he was like, you could tell that system is nowhere, fully automated, is nowhere near ready for majors. It's weird because it seems like everyone who watches AAA or you talk to players, they all love the challenge system. So I think that's ultimately what will end up in the majors, and I don't know why they're trying. It's going to be hard to ever get a fully automated zone, no matter what people are clamoring for. It seems like the challenge system is probably the way to go, but if they end up doing that, but anyway, that's where we're at there. So but even with the bad outing, Buehler's been mostly okay. It's been a little weird. So his third start was with Rancho. He got hit on the middle finger of his right hand, and he was pulled after two innings. So it's it hasn't been clean, just a clean progression. But he might only need this one other outing and then rejoin the Dodgers, the week after that. But we'll see. But that's kind of where we're at now. It was a bad week, but not the end of the world. I think I know the Padres won today, but I think the Dodgers are still the only the Padres are at 500 now, so okay. the Dodgers have a commanding one game lead over the
any
Padres.
Before we go to the break, anything you said that probably nothing to worry about, is there anything that you think is a cause for long-term concern, or is this just a matter of some bad luck, bad slumps, poor timing, that kind of a thing
for Buehler?
No, just generally.
The issues are still bottom of the order. Mm-hmm. James Outman's he's probably getting somewhat unlucky on results, but he's still striking out a lot. But yeah, like Gavin Lux isn't really hitting. Chris Taylor's not really hitting. Kiki Hernandez is like off and on, but and he's I would say below probably expectations. Even in like Teoscar Hernandez after like a hot start hasn't done a ton. But like he and Muncy, Teoscar and Muncy are kind of fine. But it's basically those six at the top are generally okay. But it's like finding stuff from the other three spots has been the issue. And then it's still the like. They really need like Bruiser Gratterall back. Like obviously it's going to be a while, but they could that's going to sort of help there. But it's going to be a little bit of a grind here.
All right, yeah. I'm ready. I'm ready for the trivia.
All right, so a healthy Tyler Glasnow has not been a problem for the Dodgers. He's been very good. He struck out 14 in 7 innings on April 9th in Minnesota. Then on Sunday, he struck out 10 in 8 scoreless innings against the Nationals, against the Mets. Who was the last Dodgers pitcher who is not currently employed by the team with multiple games of 7 or more innings scoreless with 10 strikeouts in one season?
Okay. It's a lot lined up, yeah. But I'll think about that and have an answer for you after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Who was the last Dodgers pitcher not currently employed by the team to have two or more games where they struck out, they pitched 7 innings with 10 strikeouts and no runs, right?
Yeah, in one season. Yeah.
In one season, so no back-to-backsies.
That's right.
So the wording of this question makes me want to predate the 80s. Because it lets you be sneaky with Oral and Fernando. But
no,
I'm going to go with my first guess. I'll go with my first guess.
Okay. I just will tell you, I thought when I typed it, I'm like, oh, it could be taken that way. But that's not the reasoning. It was. I will say this applies to people on the 40-man roster, including 60-day IL people.
Yeah, like
that's what I
okay. Yeah. All right. Because that would have been really cheeky if you're like...
You know what?
It was Oral Hershiser. However, he is...
Yeah, that's right.
Zach Greinke.
No. I'm looking, though. Zach Greinke, he did it twice overall, but once in 2014, once in 2015.
Okay.
You know who did it once in 2013?
Who's that?
Ricky Nolasco. Anyway...
Who else? Hideo Nomo.
Oh looking. Why is it not coming up? Nomo never did it.
That can't. That feels wrong.
You know what? It is wrong because I just completely missed him. He is tied for the second most such games in a season by a Dodger. In his rookie year, 95, he had 5. Good Lord, what a whiff on my part there. I'm sorry.
It's been more recent than that, is what you're saying.
Yes, I would say much more recent.
Oh no. Not currently on the Max Scherzer?
No. Lucky he did it once in 21.
Man, give me one more hit and then I'll tap out.
He's still active.
Okay. You Darvish?
You Darvish did it once in 2017.
Okay. Those are my guesses.
My other hint to you is no. I don't believe he's signed with a team yet this year.
That's not going to help with where my brain's at.
It's Rich Hill in 2017. Cool. So now, just the regular wording of this would, who was the last to do two in a season, would have been Walker Buehler. In 2019, he did two.
Uh-huh.
And then it's Rich Hill in 2017, but then it's Kershaw in 2016, 2. Kershaw in 2015, 6. That's the most. And then Kershaw in 2014, 2. And then Kershaw in 2013, 3. Kershaw in 2011, 4. And so there's a lot of Kershaw and Buehler there. That's why I did it that way. But then if you go back, before that group, Chan Ho Park in 2000 did it twice. And then before that, you have the Nomo year in 95. Tim Belcher did it twice in 89. Oral did not do it twice, by the way. Fernando did, though, in 1984. Koufax is the other person with 5 in a season in 65. Tim Leary did it 3 times in 1988. Koufax also had 2, 3 such seasons of 63, 64. So yeah, that's basically it. I thought Rich Hill was an obscure enough answer, but
yeah,
but
no, also, good.
Yeah,
but it also doesn't surprise me at all. So
yeah.
All right, it's time for
With Jeans and Craig. We love them.
This is 5 questions from Craig. Well, this is him talking, not me, but it works. Well, the less said, the better about the past week. Plus at home, the past week plus at home. There we go. Mm-hmm. Right emphasis there. So let's get to the questions. Last week was the 77th anniversary of Jackie Robinson's MLB debut, and it is never too late to talk about the greatness of this iconic player. So this week's trivia is all about Jackie's place on Dodger all-time batting records. Uh-huh. Nope. All of these lists are from 1947 to present, so no Zach Wheat answers.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of fun text, I did send you a text from a picture from right outside the hallway to the Dodgers clubhouse. There's all the Dodgers Hall of Famers, like there's a mini plaque up on the wall.
Uh-huh.
And I just sent you the shot of Zach Wheat with a picture of Zach Wheat right next to it.
And I was feel like well, they should, I know he never wore a uniform number, but I feel like they should retire his face.
No one's allowed to face off him. I agree with that. Along with the retired numbers, there should be like Zach Wheat, Dazzy Vance, you know, all the Brooklyn folks with, you know, get them up there. I agree with you.
Robinson scored at least 51 runs in all 10 of his seasons in Brooklyn. Can Eric name the 4 Dodgers who have done it more times than that in their Dodger career?
Okay, so 47 to present. So Pee Wee Reese.
Correct. No, not correct.
What?
Sorry.
Oh, God. Why?
He did it. Also did it 10 times.
I am angry. Okay, so then this is where it starts to get funky. Wow, so he's 74 to 82. Okay. I'm going, I don't have any confidence in this whatsoever, but I'm going for longevity. And I will say Bill Russell.
No.
He had like 19 years. or 18, I guess. Man, why is this like tripping? So Willie Davis.
Willie Davis leads the pack with 13.
This other player didn't play enough seasons. Neither did this other player. And then, like, it's just like this whole thing of, like, more than 10. Oh, okay. You know what? I went straight to Pee Wee and then went off the Brooklyn team. So, Duke Snider and Gil Hodges.
Duke Snider only did it 10 times, but Gil Hodges did it 11.
I'm so mad. So there's two more I'm missing?
There are two more you're missing.
Two more that I'm missing. So then it's just like who was around more? Why is this so dumb? Why am I so dumb here? Well, okay. So he had the... No, there's not even... Like, I will just say out loud, there's no way Steve Garvey got to more than 10.
He had 9.
Yeah. I guess I'm just feeling real, real stumped here because I'm trying to think of, like, I guess Carl Furillo?
Carl Furillo did it 12 times.
Okay. And man, it's just like having a real rough go here trying to get like another like 11 plus season person here.
Here's your big hint. When in doubt, go to the retired numbers.
Oh, Jim Gilliam.
There you go. With 12.
Yeah. Damn it.
With a minimum of 400 plate appearances, Robinson had a 400 on base six or higher, six times, which leads, if it was exact, that'd be really impressive. six times, which leads all Dodger players since 1947. Four other Dodgers achieved that figure at least three times in their Dodger careers. Can Eric tell us who are those other players?
That'd be a Chris Davis like if he did exactly 400. Like, So let's go Brett Butler.
Brett Butler did it three times.
400 on base. Oh, man. Mike Piazza?
Mike Piazza did it three times.
Okay. I knew it was twice for sure. I just couldn't. It wasn't totally positive it was three. Probably Gary Sheffield
did it three times.
So I'm missing one.
Correct. This player did it four times.
A 400 on base. No. Duke Snider.
Duke Snider is correct.
Nice.
Robinson's six seasons with 30 or more doubles is tied for second for the most seasons in Dodger history since 1947. Seven other players have achieved that mark at least four times. Can Eric name at least four of those players? 30 more doubles in a season.
At least four times. Garvey.
Tied with Jackie with six for second place.
Uh-huh. Four times with 30 doubles. Why am I overthinking this? No, he he wouldn't have done it. I think Andre Ethier
did it 7 times for the lead.
Yeah. And then let's, let's also go Matt Kemp here.
Matt Kemp only did it 3 times.
Wes Parker?
Not on my short list.
Yeah.
So 2 strikes, you got 1 more strike in you. You need to give me 2 more names.
Okay, so Duke Snyder.
5 times.
Gil Hodges?
Not on my short list. So who you missed? Carlo Ferrello, Sean Green, Adrian Gonzalez, Justin Turner.
Man, okay. I almost wanted to say James Loney, 4. But there's no way he got to 4.
James Loney did it 3 times.
I know. Yeah, I should have went to the Adrian Gonzalez well next, but yeah, nice.
Jackie recorded 72 hit by pitches, which was 2nd in the majors during his career. Robinson also is also 2nd on the list of Dodgers with 50 more hit by pitches since 1947. Who are the 4 Dodgers who got at least 50 times after being hit?
Got Justin 2 first. Turner, Justin Turner, the all-time leader. But then after that, it's like, I don't know. Homer Simpson voice. No. Okay, who got hit a lot? 50 times. I know, I want to say, like, so Ron Hunt forever was, like, the all-time leader. I don't remember if, like, I think Craig Biggio passed him or something. And I think Ron Hunt, like, I want to say ended his career with the Dodgers, but there's no way he got to 50, so I'm not going to say him. I'm just trying to think of, like, who, just because of longevity. I will say Ron Say in, like, kind of a stab here.
Not on the list.
Okay. I don't know why I'm just having trouble thinking of people who... What about Brett Butler?
Nope.
Okay.
Last guess.
Yeah, all
right. Unless you're right, then you can keep going.
Then yeah. Like the challenge system. I have to get this right. let's go for some longevity on a few of these. Duke Snyder.
Nope. So Justin leads, and then Jackie, and then Andre Ethier with 58.
Nice.
Alex Cora with 52.
Oh, man. Wow.
And this surprised me. Will Smith with 50.
Whoa.
He's gutted for the record.
he's gonna get up there. He's also led the league in sacrifice flies twice. I think, look, he's gonna set records is all I'm saying. Anyway. Yeah. Hey, speaking of...
Will Smith has always been seen as an offensive first catcher, but with his throwing on the rise and with his recent contract extension, what type of split of starts between Smith and Barnes do you see this season?
I will say Will Smith did throw out 2 runners trying to steal on Sunday. He also got thrown out himself in an act of solidarity. he's been – part of it is the, you know – they had the 2 games in South Korea, then the week off. And then he's basically been starting a lot. Like, essentially, Barnes has almost only started the one half of the day game after night game stuff so far. Funnily enough, in the 10-0 game on Sunday, Austin Barnes did pinch hit for Shohei Ohtani in, like, the 8th inning. And so that's the only non-Ohtani DH plate appearance all year. And Barnes did walk, so he upped the on-base percentage. I'm looking up as we speak. I believe Barnes has started 5 times. That's right, out of the first 23 games. But so Smith has started he did start 4 days in a row once. The other extended stuff had off days built in. So, but they basically, like, they'll probably go, like, this upcoming trip, right? Their Dodgers are off Monday. Then they play 9 in a row on the road. They play, like, 30 games in the next 32 days. So I think you're going to see a little bit more Barnes. But it's basically, like, It's probably Smith might end up. There's also no DH valve for him this year, right? Because it's Ohtani all the time. But I think you could see a scenario where like Smith gets to like maybe like 120. You know, he's usually like in that like over a little over 100, maybe 2/3, something like that, and then he gets the other starts at DH. So I think. Depending on, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it, because I don't think they're going to necessarily push him a ton, but like at some point, like you know, I guess when if the offense is struggling, like you know, and you want to get the production, I guess you maybe go, but I don't. They haven't really forced it, so we haven't seen it yet. But so I think like so this next 9 games, right? They're going to have there's two. The weird part is the last game in Washington D.C. is a 4:00 local, so it's not a true day game after a night game, but it's probably like reasonable to assume Smith is going to start at least 6 of the 9 games, right? So now it's a matter of okay, will he start 7? Do they consider that Wednesday Thursday thing? Day game after a night game, probably. Mostly also because maybe they don't necessarily want, or they would maybe start him like the first 4, give Barnes the Saturday night game, Smith the Sunday day game, and then like 2 of the games in Arizona or something. So I don't know. I just think I'm going to be interested to see how they do it, because for the first time in a couple of years, they don't have DH for Smith to do. But so I think it's going to be it's going to be more than in previous years. But we'll see. I guess it really depends on how Smith is like holding up. So he started 106 games at catcher each last year. Now Smith also spent some time on the IL last year, but again, no DH spots. So like, I think that's going to go up.
Is Andy Páez's roster spot conditioned on Jason Hayward's return, or could you foresee some other roster move when Hayward is able to play? I know you touched on this.
Yeah.
Kind of at the top, but any other thoughts? I have a word in 2 letters for you. Phantom IL.
Oh, yeah. For like a certain someone who has 2 hits on the year,
yeah,
kind of a thing. Yeah. So like that could happen, or I guess it depends what they want to do. Like, how well Páez is doing is one thing.
Sure.
And then once Hayward's back, so they could option Outman or Lux is basically like the non-IL part of it. Right. And so, and it's a matter of, so if you option Lux, that means you're basically factoring in like, Kike Hernandez, seeing some time at second, Betts some time at second with Rojas at short, although they've also kept Betts at short, and a couple times they've given Muncy days off, not a ton, but like they've started Rojas at third a couple times. But so I don't know, I guess it depends. Like if Lux he's been defensively fine at second, like hasn't had the issues that he had in spring training from short, but he just hasn't hit really. So Outman, like I said, batted ball numbers better than his actual numbers, so it's less dire. But you can see a scenario where, okay, we have our outfielders, right? Like if Páez is still going to be playing or whatever, and so I think that could be a scenario. But like it probably does depend on what happens on the road trip. Yeah.
All right. Here's a question you've been waiting for, Eric.
Wait.
I missed one.
Yeah.
Walker Buehler began his rehab assignment on March 31st. I think he can only get one more start before the 30-day period runs out. Do you foresee some type of extension being used for Buehler given his form?
I think if he pitches well, like, and I don't even think he has to complete 5 innings. He just has to like pitch into the 5th on Wednesday in Albuquerque. Then he's probably going to start for the Dodgers next time out. I also am not concerned whatsoever if they need to extend it. That's like the easiest thing in the world to do. Like, oh, he had a setback. Oh no, we have to reset it. You know, like that kind of a thing. If he needs another start, he'll get another start. I don't think it's not going to be an issue with that, you know? So like, But I do think as long as he like is healthy and pitches like into the fifth inning on Wednesday, he's probably going to start for the Dodgers next time out.
All right. Now here's the question. I know you wanted to talk about Walker Buehler's rehab surge. No,
that's it.
Stovetop stuffing. What else do we need to say? Hamburger Helper and Kraft Macaroni and Cheese were staples in our family kitchen when we grew up. Were they part of your childhood, and do they occasionally still find a place in your current pantry? Stovetop stuffing, other than sort of a traditional roux-based mac and cheese, are the highlights of my holidays, holiday meals, especially Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We didn't do any of this fancy stuffing, and I love it. I do not like Hamburger Helper. But I grew up with Blue Box Kraft mac and cheese. Character shapes the best. None of the arch or whatever they call it, tube. But now Melissa has converted me to we are a Velveeta shells and cheese family through and through.
Okay, I did not really grow up with the mac and cheese. We had it like occasionally. I think, but it wasn't like that big of a thing. That said, like, I've gotten it a few times just as like, just to have something. In fact, a couple years back, I don't know why I succumbed to this, but they had like the Cheetos brand mac and cheese. It was rancid, man. It was so bad. And so it's fine. But I don't have the nostalgic pull like that most people do.
Yep.
We definitely had stovetop stuffing like around. I will say though, at Thanksgiving, we were for the most part we're making real stuffing.
Dressing. Look at you, real fancy stuffing. Is real stuffing.
No, but I will say this: every once in a while, especially like maybe sometimes maybe right after Thanksgiving or like this summer or something, or just randomly, I'm like, oh, Thanksgiving's too far away. I will grab a box of box stuffing.
There you go.
And then just make that and just add whatever to it, right? Like, might add some sausage or something and just put it in there. And it's a wonderful thing to have. Hamburger Helper, we did have not a ton though. Yeah. It's fine, but that's like in the same, not quite, I guess, because you're not necessarily, it depends on what you add to it, but it's essentially like, you know, certain kinds of like rice-a-roni, right?
The San Francisco treat.
Yeah, right. But, or like, you know, where it's like you have the base and then you add some packet of whatever, and then you either add like sometimes, like say if you get like a Spanish rice for rice-a-roni, right? You add a can of tomatoes to that, and then like that's part of what you're making it with. But at Hamburger Helper, the same thing. You're just adding this to like some meat, right? Probably, preferably hamburger. It's in the name. But like, you know, you can kind of mess around with it. So I don't mind that. Like it's sort of the same thing. Like I will use every once in a while, not a ton. But you know those like, they're like maybe 50 cents, like the single packet seasonings, or like where you can make like a whole meal out of it, like a sort of a pouch of like taco seasoning or chili seasoning or whatever, and you just throw that with ground beef. I've done that probably more than Hamburger Helper, but yeah, I'm not opposed to having like as like a quick go-to or something in the cupboard, just to add a little something to whatever. But yeah, I think of all those, stovetop is like clearly the king for me. I'm not like brand loyal though. I will get Kroger brand or, you know, whatever. Whatever, basically whatever the cheapest box stuffing there is, that's the one I'm going to get. So yeah, I don't know.
All right, there we go. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you. I'm going to go, have some stuffing. Actually, you know what? I actually don't have any box stuffing in the cupboard right now. I'm going to have to rectify that. Thank you, Craig, for adding to my grocery list this week. But thank you to everyone else for listening. We are the 3-Inning Save Podcast, and I'm Eric Steven. That's Jacob Birch. We are produced by Brian Salvatore, who I'm sure, you know, has some sort of stuffing in his cupboard as well. And once again, Craig Manami supplied us with the questions and whetted our appetite for this upcoming week. We will be back next week with another episode, and we'll see what the Dodgers give us in the coming week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Good one, Eric.